Kabbalah addresses the nature of the deity. It distinguishes between God as he is, what we would call the essence of God, and God as he manifests himself in this world. And what Kabbalah would say is that the essential God is unknowable. The phrase that they use in Hebrew, and this became a very important phrase, it is the Ein Sof, the limitless. This is something beyond human comprehension. But God's manifestations descend to us through a series of powers from within the Godhead. And these 10 powers are known as sefirot, or stages, right, connecting, as it were, God with man. And these sefirot serve as a sort of bridge between the Ein Sof, the limitless, right, aspect of God, and our imperfect reality. Each of the sefirot has a name corresponding to the various attributes of God. And so you see again, just as Maimonides had to address the various attributes of God and connect it to the oneness of God, the Kabbalah basically does the same thing, but it draws out a completely different picture. It draws a bridge of attributes, a bridge of sefirot. The attributes are named the crown, the wisdom, the understanding, and so on. They are frequently laid out in diagrams. You find in Kabbalistic literature, people are drawing maps of these sefirot. And what is fascinating is that there are definite sexual overtones to the relationship between the various sefirot. Some are of a male nature, others of a female nature, and they create a completeness. The classic Kabbalistic text is called the Zohar, in English, radiance. And it appears to be an Aramaic commentary to the Torah, but it's way, way beyond that. This book, the Zohar, has a very strange history to it, in that no one really knew when it was written. It appears in 13th century Spain for the first time. But traditionalists would claim, no, this was written by the rabbis of the Galilee in the 2nd century CE, and in particular by one rabbi, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, who became a very central figure. Ultimately, the Zohar was printed in the 16th century, and it became an extremely influential work, although many Kabbalists actually were unhappy with that. They thought that the dissemination of the Zohar among the masses was very, very dangerous. This is sort of a secret knowledge that should not be accessible to everyone. Kabbalistic teachings received a further stimulation through the teaching and the influence of a rabbi known as Isaac ben Solomon Luria, or he's commonly referred to as the Ari. Here's a man who lived his final years in 16th century Safed, the city of Safed in the Galilee. Luria introduced new ideas into Kabbalah, primarily connected to the nature of the cosmos. God, he claimed, originally, had withdrawn into himself, into the Ein Sof, if we can imagine that, leaving a void out of which primordial man and the sefirot were created. And what will ensue now is an ongoing process of God's withdrawal and emanation. And this ongoing process would have practical implications in the nature of the world and the vicissitudes taking place within the Jewish world. Jews going from exile to redemption. And so they would link the historical development of Israel with the theological development, as it were, of the deity, leaving the world, coming, emanating back into the world. And we have to put this in a historical context. In the aftermath of the Jewish expulsion from Spain in 1492, many Jews were primed for the reception of a mystical explanation of their recent catastrophe, as well as primed to receive hopes for an imminent redemption. And this Kabbalistic teaching offered them, if it was presented properly, some sort of hope. And the spread of Kabbalah had major social repercussions among Jewish communities. Kabbalah offered an alternative system of spirituality. Because what was the existing one? The traditional commitment to rabbinic studies. But for many people, that was not satisfying. They were looking for a spiritual, inner, what we sometimes call mystical link to a truth, to a different type of truth. And this alternative later encouraged the appearance of different communal contexts, most notably the emergence of Hasidim. This was a movement based on the notion that God is pervasive and that God really requires a constant attachment, a cleaving, as it were, to him through constant prayer, rejoicing. So This cleaving is a behavioral phenomena. It's not one of an intellect. It's not an intellectual study, which was, of course, the main occupation of the traditional rabbinic world.